Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 672. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about cedar trees, Shinto shrines, Buddhist temples, ryokans, onsens, and yamabushi monks, as we talk about the Komano Kodo Trail in Japan. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk about Japan. I'd like to welcome back to the show Sherry Ott, who has come back to the show, we think, for her sixth time, and has come to talk to us about Japan this time. Sherry, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me. I love being here six times.
And that's not counting the three times that Sherry has been on This Week in Travel, one of the other travel podcasts that I do, but Sherry has come on talking about remote Alaska, Nova Scotia, Costa Brava, Lebanon, and solo travel. And that was way back 12 years ago when Sherry and I first met virtually and have become friends since. But someone told you to take a hike in Japan.
Yes, it's a doozy of a hike. It's actually a hike that I had had my eye on for a number of years. And I finally got over there this year. I was there in May and was able to do it. So the Komano Kodo, I'm really excited to talk about it.
Excellent. And let's put it on a map first.
Find Osaka, okay, which most people know where that is, mm-hmm, and go south. So south is the Kii Peninsula, K-I-I. And it's way down at the bottom of that peninsula is where the route goes. But that whole Kii Peninsula is a sacred spiritual area for the Japanese. And fun fact, Kii, K-I-I, at least this is what I was told, means tree in Japanese.
Oh, okay. And by the way, since we are talking about a hike, that reminded me that we missed one of the episodes you were on, which is doing a hike on the Camino de Ronda in northern Spain. So this is your seventh time in the show. Sorry about that. And possibly more if I've missed other ones, but excellent. So we're flying in, I suspect, to Osaka for this?
You can. I actually ended up flying into Tokyo, but that's okay, because I was doing some other stuff. But yeah, you could easily fly into Osaka and start there.
And then how long a hike is this? How long an itinerary are we talking about if you do the whole thing?
I did 5 days, which is pretty average, I would say.
Okay.
We're going to talk a little bit about the Santiago too and how these two are related, but it's very different than the Camino de Santiago. It's not nearly as far, but it can't be much more than 6 days to complete the Nakahechi route. So I about did the whole thing. And it depends on how you decide your beginning and ending point is. There's a little variation there.
Okay.
It's not quite as tight as the Camino de Santiago and their route. So it's shorter, but it's harder.
So before we start, what do we need to know about this route and what we need to pack and all of those sorts of things before we get on the trail?
So the route is over 1,000 years old. So 794 to 1185, I think they call that the Heian or Heian period.
Okay.
Basically, that was when I believe Kyoto was the ancient capital. And the emperors and their courts made this 30 to 40 day journey from Kyoto down to the Kii Peninsula. And this was a purification hike in a way. The idea was that they were in search of heaven on earth. And in this key peninsula, it was thought that it was very spiritual and sacred. There were three temples that were there, and the idea was to go to those three temples to worship. But along the way, in this 30 to 40 days, they would stop at these smaller little shrines called ogis. They would normally buy water sources, but you can find them all over on the trail. There, they would do like some purification rituals, and then they would go to the temples for bigger rituals. It was started by the royalty, the emperors and their court, but it started to pretty quickly move down to other people that were interested in doing this. So it also was a big route of the warriors, the samurais, that also did this pilgrimage. So that was how it all started. So it's not that you're walking from Kyoto like they did down to this area. There's some other routes that take you by. The key here is that you go to these three temples. That's what makes it the Kumano Kodo route or the Kumano Kodo pilgrimage, is that you go to the three temples. They've made it a little bit different over the years, but that's the idea. I suppose the other thing to know from a historical standpoint is that from a religious standpoint, I don't know how much you've talked about on the show before about the Japanese religion, Shinto and Buddhism.
We've talked some about them, yeah.
In Japan, they use both, and they use both in partnership. In fact, it was explained to me that Shinto, which is the worship of nature, is more for living, for the living,
every day,
basically.
Yeah.
So they have marriages there and so on. And that Buddhism is more for the afterlife and what happens after. So they work in conjunction. They actually, at this time, way back in 1100, they combined these two religions into something, Shinbutsu Shugo. It was the convergence of Buddhism and Shinto. So it has a little bit of both in it already. And that same notion that the gods are present in all things on earth and are also, they're found in nature. That was really the beginning of it, or that's why it's important to the Japanese people. And I think that's the thing, is modern day Japan, this area is still considered really sacred because of the temples, because of its nature. As I said, it's the Ki Peninsula, it's the Tree Peninsula. There are trees everywhere. And as you've probably heard of forest bathing, which also started in Japan, they have a real deep connection and spirituality with nature and trees. So it makes sense that this area is really important to them.
Okay.
Now, as far as what to take, it's a through hike. So, well, you could do it with a day pack, actually. And there's a reason why. And that's because it's only 5 or 6 days for the most part. So you could get by with a day pack because all you really need is room for a lunch, rain gear, first aid. That's the main stuff. Camera, obviously, if you want it. But if you want, you can wear those same hiking clothes every day. And I know that sounds weird, but once you get to the place where you're staying in these little villages, you have to wear the little slippers inside anyway. So no need for any other shoes. And they give you a yukata, which is the robe that you're also supposed to wear around everywhere.
Okay.
So really, you could take a shower, put on the yukata and the slippers, and you're good to go. And they have all of the shampoos. They even have toothbrushes and toothpaste in every hotel, I noticed. So you could get away with a day pack. Or if you want something a little bit more substantial, I took a little bit bigger than a day pack, but they also have luggage movement along this route. So that's something to note and will affect your packing.
Meaning a service that you can hire that will take your suitcase, backpack, whatever it is, to the next place. Okay.
That's a way better way to say it.
I just wanted to be clear. If it doesn't move, it doesn't make good luggage. Yes, that is definitely true. But
the only thing to know, though, about the luggage transfer is you can actually do it all over Japan, but on the route, what they'll say is that it takes 48 hours. So you can't necessarily do it from place to place, but you can do it 2 days ahead. Or what I did is I moved some stuff to my end place. And so that worked. And I took a little bit bigger bag and took a little bit more stuff in my bag. But then I had my end stuff waiting in my last place. The luggage transfer system in Japan is incredible. You can do it all over. I used it all over the country.
And I'm actually not aware of this in Japan. Is this a specific service? How would I do that?
I'm not going to know the name of the company off the top of my head, but there's a couple companies that do it all throughout Japan.
Okay. Well, we'll put links in the show notes to the names of those companies because we'll have looked them up by then, but okay.
But the thing is you really have to know very little about it before you go. So every hotel in Kyoto, in Osaka, every hotel really knows about these luggage companies. They work with them. And so all I had to do was go down to the reception and say, I want to move this bag. And they fill out everything in Japanese. They weigh the bag. You tell them where it's going to go and all that. And it's reasonable. I think I would move my bag and it would maybe be $15. And for me,
okay,
that was really worth it because I was skipping lugging it all over the train and stuff like that. And sure enough, they would have it in your room when you arrived. It was slick, I have to say. I wish all countries could do that. So the luggage thing is you can be super minimal if you want, but if you're doing this as part of a longer trip to Japan, like I did, you can also easily move and they will store that luggage.
Okay.
For you. So that part's good news. As far as other hiking gear, I would recommend proper hiking boots, meaning something that's, you know, over your ankle. There's lots of roots on this route, considering it's among forest and trees.
Because it is all about the trees. Okay.
I would also certainly recommend hiking poles. It's a lot of up and down, a lot of up and down. And if you're someone who uses poles, it's a definite. If you're someone who's on the fence, I would say take them. But that's me. I use mine all the time. Then, because you can really rewear the clothes if you'd like, I always recommend wool products, wool socks. You can wear them day after day. They dry quickly. You can even rinse them out at night and let them hang. So you can really go quite minimal if you want. A sun hat, even though you are in the trees most of the time, there are significant sections that aren't in the forest. Of course, water, first aid, and layers. It will get cooler at night.
Mm-hmm. Tell us more then about the route.
I did 5 days. Well, I should say 5 days on the trail. And then I did a day walking with a monk. It was supposed to be a rest day, but it wasn't.
Okay.
But I'll get to that. The trail is, it's a proper hiking trail because you're in the mountains. Now, you're not necessarily dealing with altitude. It's, I think the highest altitude might be 2,000 feet.
Okay.
So you're not really dealing with that issue. But you are in hills and you are constantly traversing hills up and down and up and down and up and down, switchbacks, that kind of stuff. But normally within the trees, trail is very well marked. Been to Japan. They do everything with perfection. And this is nothing different. Their trails are perfect. They're really well maintained. When you start, I would recommend there is a visitor center for specifically for the trail.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say definitely stop in there. They have a really great handout that really gives you a lot of great information on where you can find restrooms. And it gives you stuff about elevation. And it's definitely something that you'd want with you.
And this was in English, I'm assuming, your Japanese being what I think it is, the same as mine.
Yes, it is well marked and it is in English. Now, the other thing along the trail, I think it's every half kilometer, as I recall, but there's a post with a number.
Okay.
And it counts down until you get to the end. So that also coincides to that pamphlet map that you can pick up from visitor centers. So that part's really nice too, because you can really kind of see where you're at. And you can see that, like, hey, there's a bathroom possibility at 64. So you kind of have an idea. Also along the way are little ogis, or these mini shrines that you can stop at. And that is also, and you'll probably want to stop there because that is where there are little stamps, just a regular ink pad and stamp. And you have a passport, much like the Camino de Santiago, and you can put your stamps on from the ogis that you visit.
One thing that we didn't mention that we probably should have mentioned in the beginning is this whole thing is a World Heritage site.
Yes, it is. This and the Camino de Santiago are the only two UNESCO World Heritage sites that are the pilgrimages, basically.
Oh, interesting.
Which is why they are, I'm going to call them sister walks, kind of, in a way. So you can actually get dual pilgrimage status by walking both.
Okay.
But it's not you get a gold medal and a free trip to Japan or something, but that would be nice. But you get to say that you're a dual pilgrim and you get, of course, a certificate, basically. These two pilgrimages, because they're both UNESCO sites, have really partnered together. And that's one of the reasons also, I think, why they've seen the number of people on the Kumano Kodo go up quite a bit, because people hear about it when they do the Camino and then they want to come and do this.
I was wondering if that was where you heard about it.
No, it's not. I don't know how I heard about it, actually. In my travels, probably. The big surprise, though, is that the two are very different animals.
Okay.
You can't go to the Kumano Kodo and expect it to be like the Camino, because it's really, other than the fact that they're both UNESCO sites and pilgrimages, there's really not much similar.
So what is different? Obviously, also one is, you know, Buddhist and one is Catholic. There's that difference as well.
Got a very different religious aspect. Yep. It's much, much harder. It's a proper hike, I would say. You're not doing the distance that you do in the Camino de Santiago. So the Camino you're going to do is doing upwards of 15 to 20 miles a day for 5 weeks. This is 5 or 6 days on the main route, the Nakahechi route. And I think I was doing, my longest days were 9 mile days. I had 2 9 mile days and I thought I was going to give out on me because they were hard. It's a lot of stairs and a lot of steps, a lot of up and down. The other thing is, quite often, because this is a much smaller scale, and it's not nearly as popular as the Camino de Santiago, it doesn't have the infrastructure that can support stuff like the Camino does. So there's no
guest houses or
they don't have that here. There's no places for 40 people to stay. In fact, much of the time, I think on those days that I did it, there was only one day where I walked into the town that I finished at that day and stayed in that town. The other days, either I stayed right outside of town and someone, the guest house owner, came and picked me up and dropped me off again.
And so you arranged those all separately and independently also?
You can, yes, but it's not going to be easy because you're also in a very rural part of Japan where there isn't a lot of English. What I did was I used a company that's pretty well known there for this hike called Oku Japan, and they do self-guided itineraries. And really their big benefit is they have the relationships with all these little guest house owners and so on. And because even if you tried to search and do it yourself, a lot of the websites aren't in English.
Okay.
So it's hard to organize the lodging. So I used them to really organize that lodging. They have a lot of expertise on the trail. They're the only company, I think, with an office on the trail. I actually slept in the office one night. That was one of my lodging. They're quite well known on the trail, but they can help you with all that. You can do it independently. I never want to discourage anyone from trying that.
Mm-hmm.
You're just going to have to spend more time with logistics.
Well, and you're a fairly intrepid traveler too. So I would say that if Sherry feels that you probably want to use the service, I would use the service. She's afraid of very little. We first encountered each other because she was listening to Amateur Traveler episodes while sick in a bus in Morocco. So not like she's not afraid of getting out there. And go back and listen to the very first episode we did on solo travel as a woman. It sounds like then you're also then have more of a fixed itinerary. You don't have one of those days like you might in the Camino that where you say, hey, I'm feeling pretty good. I think we'll hike a little further.
No, you can't. Once again, this is one of these times where it's very different. And you're absolutely right. You need to plan this out because these towns aren't big enough to house everyone. And so you have to find alternatives. And even that all fills up. And eventually you're not going to find lodging.
Got it.
So that all needs to be organized before. Plus, the villages in the Camino de Santiago are pretty consistently every 5K or 5 to 7K.
Okay.
It's not the case here. It's not like you're walking through a ton of villages. These routes, the route is quite simple. Like you're going to go from this town to this town. There's no, if you go on, it's another 9 miles, and there's no way you're going to do another 9 miles on top of this because it's not a terrain that you can go that fast in. It's proper hiking. It's not fast walking.
Okay.
So you really do have to work it out ahead of time. What I don't know, I suppose, is if you can camp. There may be some areas where you could camp, but even that you'd have to plan out, because as you can guess, Japan is not a country where you're allowed to be freewheeling that much. So I don't think that they're going to just allow you to camp anywhere, set up and camp anywhere, like say in Norway or wherever. So you'd probably still have to even organize that, the camping. But I didn't see anyone camping, I can tell you that.
Okay.
Another difference is you're not going to see as many people on the trail at all. I walked alone, and there were days where I maybe encountered 6 other people, 10 at the most. There were plenty of hours where I didn't see anyone. So you are really immersed in the woods, and that part I really loved. Quite different than the Camino in all of those ways. There's also no one serving Camino meals, and it's obviously more expensive too.
Just because it's Japan.
Yeah, it's Japan. Because there's not albergs and there's not pilgrim meals that are 10 euro for 4 courses, things are a bit more expensive and spendy on this trail, but you can do it in 5 or 6 days. So it's not crazy expensive. In fact, I want to say the self-guided stuff that I did was, I thought it was quite reasonable for Japan, but it is different than the Camino in that sense.
Okay. Well, and I find that Japan is not as expensive as people think, in my experience, or that there are ways to do Japan cheaper than I thought it was going to be the first time I was there. I wouldn't be that much afraid of going to Japan from a cost reason. I would look into it, you know, and price out things and such, but as we would encourage you to do for everything, but I assume that's why you're listening. Now, what did you like better about this, though, when you're, as long as we're comparing it to the Camino? Shorter means it's available to more people to fit in their schedule.
Yes, which I like, and certainly better for Americans in that sense, right?
People who don't take time off, yes.
One of the things that stands out to me is the lodging. I mean, I just found the lodging really, really lovely. I stayed at a couple of ryokans, so the old Japanese-style hotels, and they're so precious. That's where you eat, and the food is incredible, and you sleep on the little mats, and I loved all of that. Other things that I probably liked was, I did like the fact that it felt more secluded. It just depends on what you're looking for in your hike. There are definitely benefits to the Camino where there's always people around and people for you to meet and so on. But this felt more meditative to me, especially among the trees. I remember being on the trail a number of times. I would stop every so often. You'd hear the leaves blow through the trees or the locusts. And it took me back to childhood of, I grew up in the countryside, so it felt more meditative, and I loved that. It was really special in that sense.
And you ended up walking with a monk.
Oh, yeah.
Let's not skip over that.
Yeah, that was really cool. So one of the things that Oku offers, they suggest, of course, a rest day, which is nice. On those rest days in certain places, this was in Honggu, I believe, they have different cultural activities you can do if you want, or you can hang out at the onsen. But I chose to do this walk with a monk. You can also do paper making and stuff like that.
Okay.
But they, I think, are the only ones that offer this walking with a monk option. It's a Yamabushi monk.
All right.
And these are the monks that you find in these parts. They're very different because they can be just regular people. They don't live at the temple. They have their own families and live in their home. This one actually ran a business. He had a little cafe in town.
Hmm.
Prior to becoming a Yamabushi monk, he was an adventure tour guide.
Okay.
He does major kayaking. Basically, they do all of their training, though, in the mountains, and they worship in the mountains. So this is very heavy Shinto idea of you find your spirituality among the trees.
And the name literally means one who prostrates himself on the mountain.
Yes. So he trained, actually, his name was Katsumi, and he trained for 6 years in the mountains, in and around his home, before he became the monk.
Okay.
So they offer that you can do a hike with them and learn more about their life and so on. But it was really unusual because they can have a regular life. When they train, they have 80K trail that they train on and so on. And then they stop at every OG along the way and do chants. And they have a conch shell that they blow into, and that's how they communicate. That's in ancient times, at least, that's how they communicated over the mountains. So he demonstrated all of that for me. So he did various chants. He explained a lot of the OG stuff. He talked about the training that they did. We learned everything about their outfit. It's really unique. They've got all these pom-poms hanging off of them. And there's a little, it looks like a little pillbox hat that they wear on their head. But, you know, each piece has a meaning to them. And it was really interesting. It brought you even closer to the trail. Now, that day with him, I walked another 6 miles around the town of Honggu. So it wasn't really a rest day because it was a hard hike. But it was definitely worth it. It was a really cool add-on that I just wanted to learn more about it and what they do. It was really special. So he could explain a lot of the stuff too to me, that lots of times, you know, you pass by on the trail and you think, I wonder what that's for. So that part was really great. There was a lot about it, the OGs and okay. kind of how they work and the idea of the purification. Every time you go to a temple or a shrine, like if there's one that has a rope and a bell attached to that rope,
okay.
there's a ritual that you go through to give, I guess, honor. And I think you're also supposed to make a wish at that same time. But you basically, you ring the bell, and that's to wake up the gods. And you bow, I think, twice. You clap twice, two or three times. And then you bow again, and you make your wish.
Okay.
So if you see, if you're in Japan and you see people doing that, that's also similar to what they do at Shinto temples, I learned. Mm-hmm. But that's what they're doing. It's a process of making a wish. The other thing that he pointed out, the lightning bolts made out of paper around all the temples.
Sure. Yeah.
That indicates basically that, or you're going into an area with deities or with gods, mm-hmm. basically. So a holy area. So you see those all over, normally at the little OGs, and you see them certainly at the big shrines, at the three big shrines. That's some of the stuff. And then he talked to us about his training. I mean, how often do you get to go hiking with a monk that can kick your butt on the trail? Like, it was a hard day.
Let's take a break here and hear from a sponsor, and that's mytravelcreditcard.com. I think it's clear that if you've been listening to Amateur Traveler that I love travel, but I don't love paying for travel, or at least I don't love paying extra for travel. That's why each day I help pay for my travel just by buying my groceries, my gas, and my gadgets. For a number of years now, my wife and I have used travel credit cards for our daily expenses. Then every year, we reap the rewards by using the points we earn to pay for airline tickets and hotel rooms. We get extra benefits along the way, like airline credit cards that let us waive luggage fees and hotel credit cards that give us a free night a year. Travel cards we use let us avoid foreign transaction fees when we travel overseas, which also saves us money. We pay these cards off every single month, and that's the smart thing to do. That way, other people are paying for our travel instead of the other way around. If you don't know where to get started, you can go to mytravelcreditcard.com, and we've picked a small number of great travel credit cards that I personally recommend, including the best starter card. Right now, the card I reach for first is from Chase, but if I find better cards, then we'll update mytravelcreditcard.com with our best picks. So check it out and let me know where you go with your points. Is there anything more we want to talk about the experience before we get to some of our wrap-up questions here?
A few things that also make it unique, like I said, is the people. I stayed in a variety of places. The first night I stayed in a guest house that was honestly someone's home. I slept upstairs in one of mm-hmm. the bedrooms, and she made an amazing meal. Now, she spoke English. She was actually very well-traveled, and she was really interesting. And her husband live there, and she has taken on doing this guest house stuff for people on the trail. So I had that experience. It was really, really lovely. So you get a chance to really sit and talk to local people. One of the nights I stayed in a proper onsen. This one, because I wanted to experience, was slightly more upscale. Mm-hmm. So it was lovely. It had a little balcony. There's no furniture. That was probably one of the hard things. I'd come in off the trail, and especially that day, it was a really hard day. And you walk in there and it's like, oh my gosh, I've got to sit on the floor, which is fine. But then I had to get up from the floor. And there were days where I just laid down on the floor on the little mats. And I'm like, oh my God, how am I going to get up from here? I can't lay there too long. But then, like I said, you get the yukatas and everything. And then you can actually go to the onsen either for that one. I could either go in the river, or they had the regular men's and women's onsens in the hotel itself. And there's a whole ritual to that that's fun. And I know lots of people are intimidated by it, but I just say, what the heck? Go for it. It's fascinating.
And the part that they're intimidated by is?
Is that you are supposed to go naked. There's no other options. You can't show up there with any swimsuit on, or you can't think that you're going to get away with that. It would be very offensive to the Japanese. So you go down in your little yukata and you have to go naked. And first, before you even get into the hot spring, you have to do a shower, which is just a little public shower. You get a little stool to sit on and shower. There's probably, depends on the size of the onsen, 5 to 10 little stools and showers that you can sit at. And there's other people sitting at them. Now, we are separated by men and women. So let me say that. So there might be 4 other women hanging out there taking a shower, and then you hang out in the onsen for as long as you want in the hot spring and come out and rinse off. And that is a sacred ritual to the Japanese. It's actually quite cool. And I learned to embrace it. At first, I'm like, I have no idea what I'm doing, and was a little bit self-conscious. But by the end, I'm like, this is awesome. It's the best. So, and I even got used to sitting down and showering on those little plastic seats. It was actually quite nice. After a long hike, I'm like, oh, thank God I don't have to stand. So that was lovely. And then you'd go from there to dinner. And dinners at onsens are an experience, and probably one of my favorite experiences along the hike. They bring you, at one point, I counted 18 little dishes in front of me, of which I probably knew what 2 of them were. The little mini dishes, these women who speak very little English, plop them down in front of you. They sometimes explain them and sometimes don't through charades. And
okay,
you have to be adventurous. You try everything. There's hot pots. There's little burners that they light, and you cook your own fish or meat or something on it. But most of the time, I was giggling because I had no idea what I was supposed to be doing. But you try things. So like there was one time in particular, I remember, where there was a plate of raw meat and there was a little burner going and there was an egg sitting in a whole egg sitting in a little saucer. And so through charades, I'm trying to figure out what I'm supposed to be doing with this. Like, I don't understand. Do I crack the egg and put it on the hot plate? Or that's what I thought was supposed to happen. But no, through the charades, she tells me I'm supposed to put the meat, the beef on the hot plate, let that cook. I'm supposed to crack the egg and put it in the little saucer and stir it up with my chopsticks. And then I was supposed to take the beef, the hot cooked beef, off and dip it in the raw egg and eat it. And I probably repeated this to her through charades 3 times because I'm like, I'm really supposed to do this? I had a lot of fun with it. I had a ton of fun with eating and trying different things, and they're all so nice. They laugh and they try to help you as much as they can. I don't know what I ate half the time, but it was delicious and fun. And then I'd have the Japanese breakfast. You can do English breakfast, I should say, too, where they normally give you more eggs and less fish. But Japanese breakfasts were great. You get fresh fish and miso soup, and oh, it was delicious. So I thought the food is definitely a highlight of this trail. This is not cheap pilgrim food. This is really great rural Japanese food. And it is very different than what we see here, at least in the States. You think of a Japanese restaurant, it's going to be sushi and maybe ramen. But there is so much more to their food than that. And the rural Japanese food is so good. So that was definitely a highlight experience for me, was the food. Other fun little things about the trail. It's probably the only hiking trail that randomly there'd be vending machines on.
Well, because you're in Japan, sure.
Oh, it's awesome.
Mostly beverage machines with the hot and the cold in the same machine.
Yes.
Okay. How did he know?
Well, my favorite part is I'd also like walk into a town and there'd be a vending machine that's selling beer. And I'm like, yes, this is the best. I can just get my own beer. Oh, there were a couple, though, that I found that were great. And there was even a place I remember I went into town and they had a cute little coffee shop. It was a tiny little town, little coffee shop that they had. And I was looking around and she's like, would you like ice cream? And I'm like, oh, no. And then she asked if I wanted espresso and ice cream. And I'm like, yes. And she brings out this beautiful cup of ice cream and a little cup of espresso to pour over the top of it. And it was a highlight for me after a long hike. So all of that was wonderful, I thought. It's a very cultural experience, too. Even though I think you get a lot of culture also on the Camino, for me, at least, the Japanese culture is so vastly different than ours. I think it felt more different.
Sure. More exotic or exciting. Yeah.
Yeah. And I also saw my fair share. The few people I did see on the trail, there were, I want to say, about half of them were Japanese.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
It's really kind of fun. They want to know how you heard about it, and they love it.
Which is different. You bring that up because that is not what you would expect on the Camino. And not half Spanish people.
No, not half. Not at all. It's half Germans, I think.
Okay.
I thought that was really nice. So you also met people along the way. Maybe you stopped for lunch. It was really lovely. We didn't even really talk about the temples, the shrines. The three of them, they're mm-hmm. also beautiful. Two of them, they're on the hiking route. Mm-hmm. The last one, I think there is a route there, but the way that I did it is I finished and then I actually took a little train to the last one because I think the hiking route there is pretty difficult and it might not be super well maintained for all I know. But Oku had me take a train to the last one, but it was still lovely. You learn a lot about the temples. They're beautiful, huge and beautiful. And the one, Nachi, that is by the waterfall. There's the tallest waterfall in Japan, and Nachi Temple is right by that. So lots of times when you see pictures or read about the Kumano Koto, you'll see that shot, that kind of temple complex, mm-hmm. the waterfall behind it. The surprising thing about that was so many steps. It was crazy. Going down a lot of steps, and it was an hour solid of down these stone steps, and stone steps don't give. And when you're at the end of a day, my knees were screaming. I wanted to be done with the steps. And then to get down to the waterfall, which is past the temple, you have to go down a lot more steps and then back up them. So be ready. There's all the entrances to the temples are lots of steps.
Well, I suspect the shot that people saw when they looked at this episode is probably going to be that picture. So I think you'll find that if you go to the show notes here for Amateur Traveler. Excellent. As we go to wrap this up, you're standing in the prettiest spot on this whole trail. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
I am definitely deep in the woods.
Okay.
And surrounded by Japanese cedar trees.
So it's not just the prettiest, it's also the best smelling spot.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, it wasn't one sight. Mm-hmm. It was this idea of being surrounded by this forest, and it was so green and beautiful, and just stopping to hear the wind blow through the leaves and the trees kind of sway back and forth.
Well, and it's a shame you don't live someplace that has forests, like, say, Colorado.
Yes, I love that too, here in Colorado. But I don't get out that often either and do that often enough.
So it's interesting. You were hiking to the temples, but it wasn't like the temple was the experience for you is kind of what I'm hearing.
And that's the other thing. The Camino, your whole goal is to get to Santiago, right? And go to the cathedral. And I don't know if it's because I don't have as tight of a bond, obviously, with the Japanese religion. But for me, it wasn't necessarily about the temples. The temples were beautiful. It was interesting to learn about them and to watch people in them and so on. Mm-hmm. But for me, it was the trail and it was the little ryokans and stuff that I stayed in the guest houses, it was the people and that trail by far.
Okay. And one thing that makes you laugh and say, only on this trail.
So when I stayed at the nice ryokan and I was there alone and I ate alone, they put you at a little table by yourself if you're a solo traveler with 18 dishes around you. And the next day, I stayed there two nights, actually, because then that next day I hiked with the monk and I stayed there again. And I hiked with the monk with another person who was also from Oku, a person who had come through Oku, Japan. And so I got to know her and she was awesome. She was Australian. We got along really well. We had a really fun time hiking with the monk and she was staying at the same ryokan, also alone as me that second night. So I said, hey, I don't want to eat alone again. So why don't we sit together? So this is what makes me laugh. So of course the Japanese are very much do not go off our process and our rule. So we tried to tell them, no, we're friends. We want to sit together. But because we had two separate rooms, they're like, no, not possible. And we're like, what do you mean it's not possible? Like, we just want to sit at the same little table with our yukatas on and laugh about this together so we're not apart. And they're like, no. And so we're like, okay, fine. We'll just take care of this when we go down to dinner. So we go down to dinner. We try to sit together. And the little ladies who served the whole meal were completely, no, you can't do this. They crossed their arms like in an X, like, no, not possible. And we're like, what? So we literally had to sit across the room from each other at different little tables and eat separately at our little table. And we laughed the whole time. It was funny because we would yell back and forth to each other occasionally. There's a strict set of rules, and that is what you follow.
Interesting.
But it was fun. It was one of my funniest nights.
Sherry, if you had to describe the Kumano Kodo in three words, what three words would you use?
I would definitely say green.
Okay.
Fresh, as in fresh air. And cultural.
Okay. Excellent. If people want to go over to Ott's World, which is Sherry's site, which I don't think we mentioned at the beginning, ottsworld.com, and find your best post on the Kumano Kodo, where are we going to send them?
You're going to go to ottsworld.com, and there is a map there on the homepage, yep. Or there's a place where it says destinations. You can click on either and go to Japan, and it will be the latest writing that I do on Japan will be the Kumano Kodo.
And I'll put a link to it in the show notes, too, so you can just go to the show notes and find it there. Assuming Sherry sends me the link after she writes the post. Sherry, thanks so much for coming back on the Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love for Japan and particularly for this trail.
Well, thank you for having me. I love coming back here every couple of years.
A word of apology for something that happened this week, which is we did a change to the feed that I talked about a year ago, but it's really taken this long to do, where the iTunes Enhanced fee is now only available on the website and everybody else is now subscribed to the MP3 feed. And I told the duo that was happening and gave some reasons for that literally a year ago, but it took this long for that to happen, but that happened rather abruptly. And then that also caused a bunch of people to get older episodes re-downloaded. And the big reason for that was it turns out that in iTunes, for instance, in the catalog, there were supposed to be two different versions of Amateur Traveler, and there were seven, and we don't really know why that was, but fixing that will cause more people to see the show because all of the reviews will be in one place and all of the ratings will be in one place and all subscriptions, and so iTunes will rank it higher. So we had to fix it. But fixing that did cause this problem. Those of you who are listening in the far future have no idea what I'm talking about. Don't worry about it. There's no problem. It's not an issue for you. Remember, we have the trip going to Turkey in 2020 in September. As of this recording, that trip is about half full. We will max that out at 16. And by the time you hear this, we may be done with that. So if you don't get into this trip and you wanted to, make sure you join the amateurtraveler.com/trips where we voted on this trip. And that's also the first people who learn about the new trips. With that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on amateurtraveler.com. Don't forget mytravelcreditcard.com for your travel credit card needs. And thanks so much for listening. I got to see one more cathedral.